the Ammersee Lake crop circle that occurred in Bavaria just a few years ago. What it is it's a representation of the Large Hadron Collider. You know, when people look at crop circles, they appreciate it from the artistic end, but a lot of people don't look deeply enough into these to realize that they convey real information, important information. The book sort of helps people understand that particular aspect of crop circles, but it also helps you know why some of these crop circles are not being created by human beings, and it gives very good evidence as to why that cannot be.
Dr. Richard O'Connor has a book. This is very timely. This is UFOs, Nuclear Weapons, and a New Age of Reason. This is on cropcircleresearchfoundation.org. That's the name of the blog, the name of the webpage I'm going to direct you to right now. But the book is available through Amazon, and I just want to dive into this with the background of Jesse Marcel, and there's so much to get into here that, Dr. O'Connor, would you please, and thank you very much for talking with me, give us your background, who you are, and what you do.
So, yeah, thanks, Wendy, for having me on. My background is as a physician anesthesiologist who worked here in Helena, Montana at St. Peter's Hospital from 1988 through 2015. And when I first arrived here, I started working in the operating rooms at St. Peter's, and one of the surgeons that I worked with was Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., who not too long after I moved here and had been working, came to my attention that he was the individual who at age 11 was living in Roswell in 1947 when the Roswell UFO event took place. And his father was the Major Jesse A. Marcel Sr., who was assigned to go out and look at the debris field and picked up all the debris out of the desert and brought it home and laid it down on the kitchen floor and showed it to Jesse Marcel Jr., who I got to know here in Helena over a period of, I think I knew him about close to 30 years. And so I got to know him very well. You know, we worked together frequently. And when I learned that he was that person who saw this material and held it in his hands and listened to his father tell him what he thought it was, that he thought it was a, you know, quote, flying saucer, unquote. You know, of course, I was interested in the story, and so I talked to him about it on more than one occasion. And, you know, I just became convinced that the story was true because I got to know the man and his work in the operating room and his demeanor as a father to a large family. And, you know, we were friends, and I know that he's not a liar. And so that kind of piqued my interest in the UFO phenomenon in general back in the late 80s, and kind of stayed interested in it all along. And then I began, you know, as I was paying attention to it, I began hearing from people like Robert Hastings, who wrote the book UFOs and Nukes, and produced a film called UFOs and Nukes, The Secret Link Revealed. And I watched that documentary, and I heard his interviews with these military officers who were stationed at various nuclear missile installations around the country talk about how UFOs would come over and disable U.S. nuclear missiles. And of course, I found that pretty shocking. And, you know, began like anybody would who becomes aware of that to question why they would be doing that. And then I began, well, even before I came to Helena, I was involved with a group called Physicians for Social Responsibility, back in the early 80s that was trying to draw people's attention to the dangers of nuclear war and how, you know, what a threat that presents to our, not just to our country, but to our entire civilization on Earth. And anyway, as time went on and I learned more and more about the UFO phenomenon and read more about it, and talked to people who have seen them and had personal experiences with them, I just became increasingly convinced that it's real and that it's important, and that these instances, when they've shut down our nuclear missiles, have an important message behind them. And so when the pandemic came along and I kind of got shut into, you know, as we all did, I spent a lot of time in my study, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to write a book about this and just put down my thoughts on paper about the relationship between UFOs, nuclear weapons, and where I, as a citizen, a dweller on this planet Earth, think that we should be headed with this issue about whether we should have nuclear weapons. And one of the NGO sort of nonprofits that I like to support is the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. They're based in Geneva, Switzerland. And they played an integral part in getting passed through the United Nations the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which became ratified and went into force January of 2021. And any country that signs on to that treaty, of which now I think there have been maybe about 55 countries, unfortunately none of them are nuclear armed countries, but 55 nations have signed on to that agreement that they will not house nuclear weapons in their country. They will not aid any country that does harbor nuclear weapons. And I think we need to see every country in the world sign on to that treaty, because I feel like if we don't do that, that eventually nuclear weapons, are an existential threat to not only the survival of human civilization on Earth, but to the survival of so many millions of species that have evolved on this planet, which has taken billions of years to accomplish. And it just seems like a cosmic catastrophe if we were to unleash a nuclear war on this planet that destroyed all of it, you know. And one of the studies that I cite in the book is a study that was done not too long ago about a very limited nuclear exchange between a hypothetical exchange between India and Pakistan that involved, I think it was 350 nuclear weapons that would be around 100 kilotons. And what would happen if something like that occurred? And it's a disaster. Just that limited of a nuclear exchange would change, you know, through the nuclear winter effect, would affect the climate of the world for 10 years. And it would reduce food supplies. Billions of people would starve to death. Millions of people within just a week time in both India and Pakistan, of course, would die. So, you know, this is something that is so serious that people kind of shut it out of their minds, you know, and you hear people say, well, that can't happen because the Cold War ended back in 1989 when the USSR dissolved. Well, that's not a fact. You know, this is still going on. And now with Ukraine, we're seeing it once again rear its ugly head in a very tangible way, when this theory of nuclear weapons stabilizing the war and reducing the number of hot wars we have And this idea of mutually assured destruction being, you know, really all it is it's just an assumption that this won't happen because of this premise of mutually assured destruction. Well, now we have a world leader who is threatening to use nuclear weapons to accomplish his geopolitical goals, Vladimir Putin. And the United States and NATO are kind of being held kind of, you know, at bay, really, by Putin through his threats of using nuclear weapons. So, you know, as Colin Powell, General Colin Powell said, nuclear weapons are useless. Well, actually, in my opinion, they're worse than useless because now they're being used against NATO to threaten us and make NATO kind of a lot less effective, I think, than what they might have been if nuclear weapons didn't exist and Vladimir Putin couldn't make those kinds of threats. So I think they're worse than worthless, and I think our world needs to get rid of them, and so that's why I wrote this book. That I think would be a good book for people to read and think about the implications of nuclear weapons. I would also add just briefly that the book also comes in a print and an ebook format. And I would really recommend people, if they're going to buy the book and try to read it, that they use the ebook format if they are at all familiar with that, because it's got, you know, probably hundreds of links to data online that helps to support the arguments that are made in the book. And of course, following those links from a print, you know, book is going to be very time consuming and not. Yeah. So I would recommend the ebook.
UFOs, Nuclear Weapons, and a New Age of Reason, and that's available on Amazon. It's a Kindle book, and one click, $9.50 is the price on Kindle. The thing about this is, I don't know that they ever considered that the nuclear weapons would be used as leverage, but that's incredibly effective right now. That's what's happening. They're stymied because they're afraid that he'll do it. Well, one way or the other, fear or not, he's got the power with just saying and implying that if you do anything to stop me, I'm going to bomb, you know, and that's it. And it's like, well, how do we come to this? I like your book, the preface, where you say, and this is pretty much blatant, that a nuclear bomb, if you're listening, you have one strapped to your back. I have one strapped to my back. And Richard, you have one strapped to your back. We don't think about it like that, but that pretty much spells it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, even all of these countries around the world that don't have nuclear weapons, all of their citizens have nuclear weapons strapped to their backs, you know. This is a worldwide existential threat to humanity and to the biosphere of this planet. And we just can't go on like this for much longer before something's going to happen. And, you know, one example that I give in the book is one day I went to work at the hospital and the fire alarm water sprinkler system had been activated because somebody started a fire in a metal garbage can. Well, somebody could have gone over there and just poured a glass of water in the garbage can, but before anybody could do that, the smoke activated the fire alarm system, dumped, you know, thousands of gallons of water on hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of expensive medical equipment in the GI suite, you know, where they do endoscopies and stuff like that. And, you know, all of this equipment just got ruined and nobody knew how to shut it down. And it took them a couple of hours before somebody finally figured out what valve to turn to shut off the water system. You know, well, that was just something that resulted from some thoughtless act. You know, somebody tossed a cigarette or something into a garbage pail, and all of a sudden you've got this cascade of events that are taking place that results in tens of thousands, at least, dollars worth of equipment being destroyed. And it took a while to get it under control. Well, those that think that the only way that we will ever have a nuclear disaster on this planet is if somebody deliberately pulls the trigger, I think they're mistaken. I think it's just as likely, and perhaps more likely, that it'll come about from human error or some electronic glitch in some monitoring system that is a false alarm. And, you know, we're walking a line here that is just absurd. You know, the stakes in this are just unbelievably off the scale. And I just don't believe that we will survive as an intelligent civilization if we continue down this road.
I want to kind of switch directions here and go into the UFO element and the ET element, because there are people, contactees, who have said over and over again, the message they get is that we need to step back, we need to draw down, we need to continue to focus on the environment and our surroundings and our communities and our people, and we need to learn how to get along, to love each other. There's more to this than just shooting everything and anything. And that's a consistent message. So when you have been and you were involved with Jesse Marcel and the library, this is jaml.org, Jesse Marcel Library. You're now in charge of that. What does the library have?
Well, it's, you know, mainly it is just the library with all of the books and the videos on the subject of UFOs that I've collected over the years, and people are able to come and check those out and have access to that information. You know, it's probably a much larger collection of UFO-related information that you would find at your public library, for sure. But I think more importantly, for years, the Jesse Marcel Library has served as a place where citizens in our local area could gather to discuss and talk about their own experiences or learn more from other people's experiences. So for years, we actually had weekly meetings there to do to enter into these discussions, or someone would present new information that we thought everybody should be aware of. It was pretty time consuming, and in certain ways, I was kind of relieved when the pandemic came along. And I was, you know, I had a very good reason to say, you know, we're going to have to stop.
Yeah.
Meeting and just wait for this pandemic to go away, which really I would say only now have we gotten to a point where I personally am comfortable inviting people back to the Jesse Marcel Library and beginning to resume having meetings there, which I've been sort of thinking very seriously about just even over the past few days. I think it's a great venue for people to get together. We have a building, you know, that's kind of dedicated to this. It's heated, it has lights. It's a building that I own, and so, you know, I don't have to pay rent there or something. So it's sort of an ideal situation for people that are interested in the subject to get together. What I've been trying to think of doing is seeing how I can expand the impact and the significance of the Jesse Marcel Library to a much wider audience than our local community here in Helena, Montana. You know, I mean, this is a town of 30,000 people sort of out in the sticks relative to the rest of the country, you know. And I think it is time, really, that this needs to become a meeting place for citizens to come and not only get together and discuss and learn about UFOs, but also to express their thoughts and their opinions and their ideas about where our country and where our representatives in Congress and in our state legislatures need to be going with this, you know, because I think we've gotten to a point now where it's extremely important that our representatives, our political representatives, begin to hear from people and know that there are lots and lots of people that are interested in this and have opinions about where we should be headed with this, and know that, you know, that we have their back when they take a political risk and go out and begin talking about UFOs, as, for example, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has recently done and Senator Marco Rubio have done. We need to see more of that, and we need to make sure that our representatives in Congress realize how important it is for them to gain control over this entire issue, you know, because they have not had control over it. But they're trying to now. And I think it's just critical that that happen. We've got to get all of this out of the Department of Defense and get it back under control of, well, I shouldn't say back. I don't think it ever was under control of Congress. I think that there was an extremely limited number of people in Congress that had any idea about it. You know, Harry Reid,
yes,
being an example of one who did.
Long time. He was a proponent from the beginning, saying this has to be talked out about. This is real. And just kept banging the drum, please pay attention. And there, I mean, if you want to read about him, do a Google search if you're not familiar with who Harry Reid is. But he was from the get-go saying that this is something we need to address, and doing everything he could to be part of that.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I'm grateful to Harry Reid that he took the initiative to do that and got this ball rolling. Unfortunately, there are still people who are trying to obstruct and obfuscate the information and divert people's attention away from this. And a good example of that is something that I just finished listening to minutes ago, with an interview with Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, who, if people want to look him up, you know, you will find out that he's a man who would have definite knowledge about all of this, but denies it all still to this day. On this day, this Bobby Ray Inman is saying that, you know, basically, move on. There's nothing to this. And, you know, it's such a disappointment that there are still people who have either are still in the Department of Defense, or like him, he's been retired from the Navy, but would have known a great deal about this, and he's just denying it all, you know. So there are still forces out there that are trying to move us back in the other direction, away from people becoming aware and grasping the implications of all of this, which are huge. And trying to keep us mired in ignorance. And I find it just appalling, really, that Admiral Bobby Ray Inman has done this. And hopefully there are those that are still fighting for the truth that will overcome these obstacles.
Some of it, you know, with Dr. Stephen Greer, he's been trying to get this information out for at least maybe, what, 1-2 decades. And he's always said that there are certain elements that prefer that this stuff stays clandestine and that it never becomes public for whatever reason. But he's been one of the people who's organized events and activities for people to try and make contact, CE5 contact.
Yeah.
And
right.
We talked.
Well, now we know that, Admiral Bobby Ray Inman is on that team that he's referring to that doesn't want this information out.
Well, at least we can identify one.
Yeah, yeah, We definitely know who one of them is now, for sure.
But I wanted to get into that, too. I mean, going back to the nuclear thing and bringing up the UFOs, there have been times when, and this is what's so fascinating, and I think Robert Salas, who talked about knowing when they shut down the missile silos. Do you have the information on that? Because I want to bring that up, too, that they shut them down.
Right. 10 of them, yeah. At his, you know, at his launch control facility. And there have been lots of others, you know, lots of others.
Well, there's something that is about that issue, that there's another element here that might be able to intervene. It's just how many times are they going to intervene?
Yeah, or if they will intervene, you know, I'm not confident that they would. I know a lot of people have that opinion that if there was a global nuclear war that they would intervene. You know, I guess I would say I hope that they would, but I'm not confident that they would, because I think, you know, we all agree that the laws of evolution basically favor survival of the fittest. And if an intelligent civilization is willing to pull the trigger on something like that, then how could they be described as being fit in any description of being fit, either in the realm of intelligence or in the realm of ethics, morals? I would say that we would be found severely lacking in all of those categories if we let something like that happen and pulled that trigger ourselves. So would they intervene? I don't know. If I was them, I don't think I would. I think I'd just move on to the next planet that might harbor intelligent life and see what happens there. You know?
Well, I'd hate to think that a two or three bad apples could spoil the whole thing for all of us. But, yeah.
You know, that's a great point, Wendy. And it's just, I think if you look at humanity at large, my belief is that most of the citizens out there are good people that would give you the shirt off their back if you needed it. But you get some of these bad players, these narcissistic, greedy, power-hungry, amoral people who get into these positions of power. And we've seen this happen, you know, back in World War II. And the destruction that they can create on this planet is just beyond belief.
What I have seen in this whole drama playing out, and we're insulated in the United States, we're insulated from it, but watching and knowing the background, the journalists in Russia, any independent channel that did not espouse the agenda, the line, was basically silenced, and those journalists are now, I think Motherboard is trying to organize one of the independent stations, all of those journalists, to give them a platform. But the main station that is the voice of the state, one of the producers, the female producer, went behind the announcer, the newscaster, with a sign that said, "No war, stop war." That person,
I saw that.
That is, those kind of actions from people who have no power, but have a tremendous ability to interrupt or disrupt what's happening, that took tremendous courage. And they're still.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm watching those people thinking, this is where we live. These are our examples of people who are willing to go forward at all costs. And she said it was the right thing to do. She could not watch what was happening without doing something.
You know, the courage of that woman is just, my hat is off to her. I read somewhere that she's the mother of two kids.
Yeah.
You know, that lady has a lot to lose, but yet she, like you said, you know, she mustered the courage because of her ethics and her belief in a better world, you know, that she would love to see for her children. And so she did what she did. And I just, my heart goes out to her, and I just admire that kind of courage that people will step up and do something like that. It's just beyond belief. I don't know if I would have that kind of courage, you know.
Absolutely. Until it happens, I don't think any of us know. And I'm not sure that she did before she did that either. But watching and knowing what was happening, as a journalist, as a broadcaster, as a media person, you have sometimes access to information that the public doesn't have. And so you're constantly looking for leads. You're constantly trying to see, is there another angle? How can I tap into this? And so they knew, I'm sure, with the other organizations out there that were being shut down and silenced, that the story that they were being told they had to tell at all costs wasn't correct. And so that part of it is, how do you, in your own soul, your own mind, go forward with that kind of information, knowing it isn't just you, it's a whole it's a whole country that you are leading down that path. So I think we're seeing this.
I know that her first name is Marina, and I would just like to say thank you, Marina, for what you did. Thank you for your courage, and may we find the courage, many of us here in the United States and in Russia and in Ukraine, to defeat this man and get this chapter behind us and move on to a more peaceful world where we can hopefully one day engage with these beings, whoever they are, wherever they're coming from. They're observing all of this, and hopefully one day we will get to a point where we can interact with them in a transparent and peaceful way, and learn things from them that will be of immense benefit to not only our civilization, but to the planet as a whole, you know.
There's something, I watched the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, and this is something that, you know, before it's been 5 minutes till midnight, which means the end of the world, Armageddon. And that was like, oh my gosh, we're 5 minutes away. This is 100 seconds as of January of this year, 100 yes. seconds to midnight, saying this is the closest we have ever been to pushing the button on the end of our existence, and saying, you know, we have to think about this proactively, of this is our planet, and something of this magnitude with a nuclear weapon or multiple nuclear weapons, if they're all set to blow, it puts the end of humanity. And it, not just us, we haven't really considered how difficult it will be to survive when there's no, and we're seeing that with the wheat harvest, with all of the, I mean, as far as I've read, Ukraine and Russia are, they provide a lot of the wheat, which with all of this going on, that will disrupt the wheat supplies for many countries, which means bread, you know, basic staples. These kinds of things have a larger influence and impact. And until something like this happens, we're really not clued in to how fragile our entire existence is on this planet when this kind of thing comes into play. So maybe we needed to see it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's we do need to wake up and realize that, you know, civilization is not a given. You know, it's a fine line between that and just utter chaos. You know, so we should be. I think we are the de facto stewards of planet Earth, and to think that we've set up the situation that we could just burn it to the ground in a matter of a few minutes is just unbelievable.
I want to know what you thought before you met Jesse Marcel Jr. about UFOs and ETs and all of that. What did you believe?
I think before I met Jesse, I didn't really think about it too much. You know, I might have had something happened when I was a kid, because I probably 6 or 7 years old. One day I came out into the breakfast room and asked my mom and dad, you know, did you all see the UFO last night? And my mom remembered that, and she was talking to me a couple of years ago. She's 93 years old now, and she was talking with me a couple of years ago, and she asked me, do you remember that morning when you came out of your bedroom to the breakfast table and asked us if we had seen that UFO? And I said, well, I kind of have a vague recollection of something that lit up my bedroom one night. But all of my memories of that are so foggy that I just don't really register anything. Did something happen? I don't know. Is that where I sort of got my first interest in this? I don't know. But I will say that I didn't really think much about UFOs before I met Jesse Marcel. But, you know, after I met him and knew him for so many years and realized, you know, this man is, he's not a liar. So what he's saying happened. And once you absorb that into your belief system, I mean, it's not, it becomes less of a belief and more just knowledge. You know, this happened. Then from there on, it was just a matter of, well, what else have I been lied to about? You know, what else is there to know about this? And so I just dug into it more and more. And when I read Colonel Corso's book, you know, The Day After Roswell, that was another piece in the puzzle where I was like, well, this man was a career intelligence officer in the Army. He had no reason to write this book and write a book full of lies. You know, what could he have possibly had to gain from writing what he did, unless it was simply just to tell the people the truth? And that's what I think it, that's what I think his intention was, and I think that's what he did.
There is so much information about, you know, Google, YouTube, whatever, on UFOs and contactees and extraterrestrials and whether they exist or not. And people are still, I think, in some circles, shamed for or ostracized or the jokes. And I thought that would go away once the U.S. government and the Pentagon and the military started saying, yes, they're real. Yeah, we're studying them, you know, and this is what we've got. And here are the videos. I thought that might go away, but there is still a stigma attached to this. And I am hoping that what you are doing and others like you are doing is helping to raise the awareness and reduce the stigma. Because with this, and then we go to Bobby Inman, who says, oh, it's all a bunch of bunk. I am hoping that we will get past this. And I'm just not sure exactly what the event is that will take us there. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I mean, you know, there certainly could be these others. I call them the others in my book because I don't refer to them as extraterrestrials or ultra-terrestrials or interdimensionals or, you know, time travelers or whatever they are, whoever they are. We don't really know, you know, but we just know they're real and they're here. And so it's certainly in their purview to end this set of lies that we've been fed for years and years and years. You know, they could do it in one day if they wanted to. And maybe they will. You know, I keep hearing from the likes of Christopher Mellon, for example, saying that these interactions with our U.S. military pilots are happening almost on a daily basis. So there seems to be some ramping up of the pressure from the others on the pressure being exerted on our Department of Defense to come clean with the people about this, you know, and it seems that that's how they're doing it, is pressuring the military, interrupting their training exercises. And, you know, so if they've stepped up to doing this, what's the next escalation going to be? Because I think that this is maybe not super new, but I think this has been within the past few years that they've been talking about this, that these instances of, you know, zooming our jet aircraft or hovering around our carrier, Navy carrier strike groups seems to be a new level of pressure being put on the military to move in a different direction with this. So I suppose that, you know, the next escalation could be something like them hovering over the White House and not moving from that position. You know, that would do it, wouldn't it?
Personally, I hope they hover over Russia and stop those nukes.
That would be awesome.
That would right be now, awesome. That's the PowerPoint, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the other thing, too, is I wanted to get into, we talked about you had taken a picture I saw on the internet, of course, you know, doing all my lovely searching and stuff. I saw that you had taken a picture of UFO. And then,
yeah.
Well, this is what happens to the best of us when we think we've got something really cool. What happened with that?
So it was a very convincing to me picture of what was a UFO. I had, you know, I had this website, cropcirclesresearchfoundation.org, and on that website, I put messages. I was thinking, you know, maybe I can communicate with these beings, the others, through the internet. They're up there. They might intercept signals that are sent back and forth to satellites. So maybe they might intercept this and come to my cameras that I had mounted. And I put the latitude, the longitude of the cameras. Please come here and have a very clear photo of your craft taken. So we'll have convincing evidence that you exist. You know, this is prior to 2017. And one day, you know, I'm checking. Wendy, I went through probably close to 500,000 photographs of things that were, you know, that would trigger the camera. Could be, I had them set at a very sensitive setting so that they would be triggered easily. And I got, you know, bugs, stink bugs, bees, squirrel tails, trees moving in the wind, you know.
Yeah.
Just
tail.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of pictures. And then one day, bam, I got this one and I was like, holy shit, this looks like a UFO. Mm-hmm. And so I made the picture public as much as I could, saying, you know, thinking this was a successful mission. You know, I communicated with them through the internet. They responded and they came to my cameras and they allowed a very clear, distinct picture of their craft. Well, once I put that out there online, of course, I started getting responses from people who were had a lot more expertise in photography than I did. And they said, I think that's a raindrop. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's no way it's a raindrop. It's shaped like an ovoid. You know, it's not a round. It doesn't look like a teardrop. It was kind of flattened. And, you know, thin, just like you would expect the shape of a classic flying saucer. And, and I was like, there's no way this is a raindrop. Well, turns out that I got enough of these responses and I thought, you know, I've really got to prove to myself that this is what I think it is. So when the snow and ice had cleared off of the rooftop that I had to go up on to test with drops of water that I dripped in front of the camera. And Wendy, every drop that I dropped looked exactly like a UFO. So they were right. You know, it was a raindrop that my camera caught. And of course, it was embarrassing to me. I did retract it on my website, but apparently a lot of people didn't see that. But what I thought was a UFO turned out to be simply a raindrop. And, you know, it was an honest mistake. I wasn't trying to deceive anybody, but that's what it was. And so it's the lesson to be learned here is be careful about what you interpret as verification of anything that has to do with the subject of UFOs. You know, be very circumspect about stuff that other people put up. Check it out. Be skeptical, because stuff like this can happen, even not on purpose. But yeah, so that's the lesson to be learned. For me, it was anyway. It's just be careful. You know, try to corroborate with further experimentation. Don't jump to conclusions about any of this.
I think that's a part of it in a wider, how do I put this? When people have experiences, there is a telepathic contact. I have had that, and it said, go look up. I didn't see anything. I saw butterflies. I saw clouds. And so my telepathic response, oh, is that what you are? Yes, that's what we are. And it kept saying yes, and I'm thinking, okay, this is just, I'm being played with. My husband came home, and he said, did you see that over the house? And it looked like a star, but it was the wrong time of day for a star. And I said, no, but I was told to look up, go outside and look up. I never looked up that high. I thought it would be, you know, tree level or something like, I had no idea what I was looking for, but it was a telepathic thing that said, go do this. And so that's what I responded to. And then when he came home and said, do you see that thing over the house? I went out and I took a picture, and it looks like a little tiny, you know, white pin in the picture. There is nothing to see except this little white teeny tiny dot. So I can't prove anything. But knowing that I had that prompt, and then another time I took a picture of a star. I thought it was a red star. I thought it was Mars. I thought, well, this is really cool. And I took the picture, and then it flashed back and blinked at me. And I don't mean just blink. I mean blink, 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 blink. And I'm like, whoa. I don't know what it was. So these things happen. And I don't have evidence. I have an experience that I can say there's something going on. And we are supposed to question. We are supposed to think twice about what we assume about our reality, in my opinion. But I'm not going to go out and try and convince anybody else. I'm just going to say, this is what happened, and this is how it happened, and why I have an opinion about there's more to it than just what we're looking at. There's also a sense of feeling and interaction that comes along with this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely it does. You know, I have, you know, one last thing I'd like to say. I know that we're probably running out of time here, but I was sitting in the chair that I'm sitting in right now talking to you, sitting in my study at my desk at my computer one Saturday morning. This was probably 5 years ago, and nobody else in the room. The doors closed. My wife was downstairs cleaning. Nobody else in the house, just she and I. I hear a very clear voice that says, there will be judges. And I spun around in this chair, and I looked to see who is in the room talking to me, and there's not another person in this room. Now, you know, I don't take drugs. I drink very little alcohol. I had a very responsible job. I never have heard voices. I have no psychiatric history. I never seen a psychiatrist or a psychologist. You know, I've always felt that I was a very grounded person, and yet this event took place. This happened. And I heard, there will be judges. Now, it was left to me to determine what was that and what did it mean? I still today, of course, I have to guess at that. But at that time, as I am now, I was interested in this nexus between nuclear weapons and these others. And so my conclusion, at least at this point in my life, is it has to do with that. And I don't know, you know, where to go with that other than to think that, you know, they're watching, and they're making judgments about what's going on down here.
Okay, I'm going to just suggest John Foster, UFOs.com. This man was an engineer. He did not have any conscious memory of contact until 1986. And when he did, they had warned him that if he chose to get out of the program, so to speak, then he would have some health issues as a result, because it would be a shock to his system. He did. He had 3 heart attacks. He now has a third of his heart left, but he's in his 80s. And he still maintains his website. And on the website, he talks about, you know, you can read the books that he has done books. He has images. He's drawn, because he's an engineer. He has these very wonderful drawings of the ships, the crafts that he experienced. And he had the memories of them being present, and him interacting with them, and then having those memories you weren't allowed to remember. and other people who were involved and the things that he was shown about our future, which right now that future is coming into play. He shares it on his website. What he says, the men spoke in a human, normal human voice. And when the unseen voice spoke, it was a rich male voice speaking in perfect English. The information he had from them said that if they hadn't interfered in the past, we would have destroyed ourselves. And if they don't interfere now and in the future, we will destroy ourselves again. So that's an inkling of what from a contactee who says he doesn't know. In some ways, he wished he'd never had the memory that he, you know, but at the same time, he has all those memories that of that contact of things happening when other people were frozen in place and he watched things happen around him. So I'm just thinking that correlates to your saying there will be judges. We are being watched. Yeah. We are being watched. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, this description certainly fits what I experienced. You know, it was a very clear voice. I would call it sort of androgynous. You know, I wouldn't call it computer type voice. You know, it was and very clearly perfect English. And, you know, I was just like, what was that? Because I've never experienced anything like that before or since. And it was shocking to me at the time, very surprising, but definitely something that, that happened.
And see, I think that's fascinating in terms of, you know, why that statement. And right now, it may be that that's what's coming into play, that that's, you're remembering it now, we're speaking about it now, the thing about John that I chose this page at this time for no reason except that I am familiar with John, and I thought, well, and there I'm staring at this thing when it says it spoke perfect English, and you're telling me there it was in the room. So these things, I don't think they're coincidence. I think they are threads in the timeline, and when we're supposed to have information, it comes to us as we need it. So here we are with Russia just seconds away from doing something that none of us want to see. And how do we go forward? We're going to find out.
Yes. Yes. Well, we have to stay courageous and speak our truth.
Absolutely. And your book, the when I'm looking at the reviews here, are impressive. On Amazon.
Good.
Yeah, you got some good reviews.
Great.
So this is UFOs, nuclear weapons, and a new age of reason. And again, if you're interested, what you have advised and encouraged is to get the Kindle, the ebook, because it has all the links that are active. And I think that's a good way to go. It's nice to have the links because you're immediately in touch, in tune with the information. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think, you know, doing what you're doing is a great thing. It's going to help. So keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. We didn't get into your crop circles, and I like that. That's like, darn.
I would just say that if people will read the book, in the book, they'll find an analysis of five different crop circles that I think are amazing. You know, they're amazing. And the information to be gleaned from those five crop circles is definitely worth reading the book. In fact, if they want to just skip the rest of the book and read the chapters about the crop circles, I think that they will find them fascinating.
Okay, that's not fair. That is totally not fair.
Well, yeah.
Okay, how do we put this? I'm going to put this a tease at the beginning, all right? Okay. Okay, the book, we're talking about nuclear weapons and UFOs and all that, but the real stuff, the gold, is the crop circle information at the end of the book.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Okay, well, okay, just narrow it down to one. Just narrow it down to one and give me a tease.
The crabwood crop circle is the one that I start off with. And go through all of that, you know, the message that was in the crabwood crop circle, but kind of go a lot deeper than just that message. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I need to see it.
Well, the message in it was beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises. Much pain, but still time. Believe. There is good out there. We oppose deception. that was basically the message in the crop circle.
Okay.
That was written in binary code. And if people aren't familiar with that, they need to look it up. It is just unbelievable, you know. But
yes.
Another crop circle that I go into is the White Sheet Hill crop circle, and how it is a representation of graphene. And it shows the electrochemical properties of graphene. And graphene, if you're not aware, is a molecule that is completely composed of carbon in a single molecular layer that's arranged in hexagons that sort of look like chicken wire. And graphene, because of its the way it is constructed and the way the electrons are arranged in the molecule, it has some very unique properties as far as electrical conduction is concerned. And so a lot of this information is embedded in this White Sheet Hill crop circle. And so there's a detailed description of that in that chapter on White Sheet Hill. And then there was the Ammersee Lake crop circle that occurred in Bavaria just a few years ago. It's a representation of the Large Hadron Collider. So, you know, when people look at crop circles, they tend to go, wow, that's a pretty piece of art, and they appreciate it from the artistic end. But a lot of people don't look deeply enough into these to realize that they convey real information, important information. And so the book sort of helps people understand that particular aspect of crop circles, but it also helps you know why some of these crop circles are not being created by human beings. And it gives very good evidence as to why that cannot be. So, you know, that all crop circles are created by human beings. I think it gives a very convincing argument for why that cannot be. Just those chapters on the crop circles, I think, are worth the price of the book.
I like the John Lennon quote that you use. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You don't have it memorized, do you?
I don't. I know the gist of it, but no, you could go ahead and read it because people should know that.
Okay, I got it in front of me now. If the masses started to accept UFOs, it would profoundly affect their attitudes toward life, politics, everything. It would threaten the status quo. Whenever people come to realize that there are larger considerations than their own lives, they are ripe to make radical changes on a personal level, which would lead to a political revolution in society as a whole. And that's John Lennon.
Yeah.
And I think that's
absolutely
what we saw with Marina there. Was her name, Marina?
Marina, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping we see more of that.
She's a hero, you know.
Richard O'Connor, author of UFOs, Nuclear Weapons, and a New Age of Reason, also the organizer, owner, proprietor for the Jesse Marcel Library?
Yeah, kind of the director. Yeah.
Okay, director. The official title. And I'll post some links on the description for this show, along with some YouTube videos and that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Wendy. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Wendy's Coffee House, about my interview with UFO experiencer John Foster. This information didn't make it into the interview, about the birth of his daughter Kendra. There was a Native American woman who came up to him and repeated comments that she would help their people at some time in the future. He did ask her what the spirits that talked to her looked like, and she said it was like a disc or light hovering over the campfire. And she said the voice spoke from the light or the disc. And as it turned out, he said, Kendra produced an educational video for the Nebraska tribes about the oral traditions of the tribes. And having that indication that the Native Americans were tuned in to Kendra's birth and then talked to him because of a resulting ET UFO experience is fascinating. Kendra didn't bring that up during our conversation. And so what does she think about the reception to all of that information?
To all of those people out there who think it's a bunch of baloney, I think maybe what I want to say is it's okay to think it's baloney. You can start from that premise. Scientific process allows you to start by thinking that things aren't going to come out right with your thesis, but keep an open mind, because we know that things aren't, you know, in every aspect of life, things are not what we think they are. Our scientific criteria may be different than what we've thought it was for the last several hundred years.
The interviews with Kendra and John Foster are in the Coffee House archive at wendyscoffeehouse.com.